יהיו לרצונים רפי, והגיון ליבי לפניך, אדוני צורי וגואלי. Shalom Aleichem, Beruchim Habayim, welcome everybody to our Kosher Torah Open Forum for tonight, Monday, February 15th, I'm traveling in my mind in space, time, hopefully I'm not traveling in space, I'll fall out of my chair, 2010, here we are, at least I think, last time I looked, it is Bet of Chodesh Adar, so it's time to have all kinds of fun. So speaking of fun, boy oh boy, we have a lot of fun to talk about tonight. We're getting in the nice juicy stuff tonight in our third lesson in Sefer Chanoch, our book of Enoch. Tonight we're going to introduce a very interesting midrash. I don't know what else to call it. This midrash, even though it's found here in Sefer Chanoch, and there can be those fundamentalist radicalists who want to disavow Sefer Chanoch as having any Judaic importance, but of course by doing so they will violate thousands of years of Torah, mitzvot, midrash, and agadata, because the material that is found here is clearly found in other midrashim. It's found in the Zohar HaKadosh, it's found in midrashim, throughout all the Judaic literature. And being at that, I think historically, validating is later material. This obviously the older material. So that means that somehow, somewhere, the later material got it from the earlier material. Therefore, of course, validating the authenticity of the material that we got here in front of us. And that's why we're going right back to the Makor, the source. What it states here is famous story of Genesis chapter 6. The sons of God came down and took the daughters of men. You will find, according to one opinion, what we call the Pshat, that they were the sons of Cain who came and took the daughters of Shet. And the Nephilim were supposedly just human beings. But that has always been, if I could call it, a minority opinion. The majority opinion for millennia, not even centuries, but millennia of centuries, was that these were actually fallen angels. And we have tremendous misinformation, ignorance about the actual state and status of angels. Unless a person has really had exposure to and interaction with these otherworldly entities, then all of the academic theoretical knowledge in the books is really misunderstood. And whenever it comes to a discussion of malachim, angels, I like to use a modern day term which a lot of people get spooked by, but I think it's important to use simply because I think it helps identify in a more accurate and less mythological term who our angelic visitors truly are. And for those of you who know my material at koshertorah.com, the books that I've written, the lessons that I've taught that are available in CD and MP3 and the ebooks that are available and on and on, I've always and always do refer to angels as the non-human, otherworldly, extraterrestrial things, creatures, entities that they truly are. And when I use the term extraterrestrial, I'm not referring to the Hollywood version of the little green men who come out of the flying saucers and shoot their ray guns. I'm not referring to Klingons who are going to battle us for the control of the Starship Enterprise. I am not even speaking of little green Jedi masters named Yoda from Dagobah. Let's keep fantasy aside, okay? Extraterrestrials there be. Life in outer space? It boggles my mind how a rabbi today, in light of what our sages have written over the centuries, could ever state there is no life in outer space. Rabbi Pinchas Horowitz, one of the great Talmidim of the Gaon of Vilna, clearly writes in his book Sefer HaBrit, life in outer space, other planets, take on other forms, etc. In a great book called the Kuzari Sheni, I believe by Hacham David Nieto, also writes about extraterrestrial life on other planets. These sages have written these things hundreds of years ago. Of course, the Zohar and other material speaks about it in Kabbalistic literature. And of course, there is even references to this in the Gemara itself, according to Rabbi Arya Kaplan in his Hebrew book Morei Or. If people deny the words of our sages, then, excuse me, this disqualifies them from being authoritative Orthodox rabbis. Our Torah Judaism is based upon the Masorah, the chain of traditions of what our sages have taught. And if a person, A, does not know that, meaning what our sages have taught, or B, teaches something contradictory to them, then they have placed themselves outside the Mizgeret, the framework of kosher Orthodox Torah Judaism. And I don't care if they have a big black hat and speak in anything they want, they are the outsiders and foreigners to Judaism. And they might, and they are equally as guilty as the Reform and Conservative and others who they themselves condemn. Because bottom line, Torah is based upon the words of our sages. You either hold by the words of our sages or you are not a kosher Jew. Anything and everything that I will share with you, I have sources for, and I'll share with you. You don't have to accept the words of our sages, because when there are different views and opinions in idea areas which we call hashkafa, which is ideas and thoughts and midrash and stuff, this is not law that you're obligated to accept, but you are absolutely prohibited and forbidden from saying this is not Judaism. So therefore, when Rabbi Aharon Soloveitchik, Alav Shalom, who is the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva University, big place, big Rav, the Briscoe Rav, when he wrote that the sons of God who came down and took the daughters of men were actual flesh and blood humanoid aliens from another planet. And yes, he did say that. It was written in an interview of his in the Jewish newspaper, The Forward. I saw it with my own eyes. I didn't believe that a Rosh Yeshiva, a Gadol Ador, would say something like that. I was a rabbi at the Briscoe Yeshiva. I had daily access to Rabbi Soloveitchik. I knew his sons, Rabbi Eliyahu and Rabbi Moshe, personally. I went and asked Rabbi Moshe, because I didn't want to bother the aged rabbi, because you don't need to. Ask his son. This is what I heard in your dad's name. Would you like to denounce and disclaim it? And he said, absolutely not. It's my dad's opinion. That's what he said, and it's true. The words of Rabbi Soloveitchik, good enough for me, in conjunction with Rabbi Nieto, Rabbi Pinchas Horowitz, big books, Kuzari Shini, big books, Sefer HaBrit, right? These aren't words you just toss out. So therefore, you must learn something. When we talk about angels, even Rambam knew something. Rambam is claimed or believed to have been the head of the philosophical school who had no access and exposure to mysticism. Let me tell you something. Rambam was a smart cookie, right? He was a real chacham. He was truly the Rabbah of Yisrael. When you read his Mora Nebuchim, his Guide to the Perplexed, and anyone who doesn't today, I say shame on you. And I don't care if you have certain Hasidic schools that don't like it, you know? Shame on them too. The Mora Nebuchim is a beautiful philosophical text. Philosophical text. Which cloaks under the guise of philosophy many of the prophetic Kabbalistic truths. Abraham Abulafia saw that. Many people laugh at Abulafia and said, oh, he called things Kabbalah that weren't Kabbalah. I turn around and laugh at them. And I said, you don't understand Abulafia. You don't even understand the Rambam. When you read his Yesodei Torah and the beginnings of his Mishnah Torah, when you read especially section 3 of the Mora Nebuchim, it deals about prophecy. Only somebody who knew from experience could write those words. So what? He cloaked it in the language of philosophy and the discussion of the day. In those days, in the Arabic, Spanish environment in which he existed, there were a very Greek-oriented philosophical society. What language do you want them to speak in? Remember, Mora Nebuchim wasn't written in Hebrew. It's written in Arabic for everybody to understand. Spoken the language of man, which is our way of Torah. He knew stuff. Yes, he did. Now, I'm going to tell you this. When it comes to understanding Malachim, he writes that there is that level of Malachim called the Ishim. Men is the correct word. When you read stories in the Bible, we know about the famous visions of Isaiah, Ezekiel, where in which they're seeing Malachim with six wings and four wings and single feet and glowing faces. But Yehoshua saw Metatron, and Metatron came and cloaked himself in flesh and blood. Famous story, the coming of the captain of the army of Hashem. When Samson's birth was announced, Malach came looking like a human being. There are entities which come down and take on flesh and blood. And it's exactly what we're talking about here in Hanoch, which is why I'm giving you this introduction. Because you have to put things in a context in order to understand them. Yes, angels still come down to this very day in the form of flesh and blood. And no, not like those little statues that they sell in the Hallmark stores in the malls. I don't think angels come down as 16-year-old blonde-haired Swedish-looking girls wearing, you know, long toga robes with little wings coming out the back. Yeah, I'm sure everybody would love to fantasize about that. But what can I say? Those fantasies are just silly and ridiculous. Getting back to business here. A real malach, like Rav Soloveitchik says, they come down in the form of human beings. And I might add, this is not unique in human history to the days before the flood. Torah Midrashim tells us a very profound story. It is stated, and this is actually recorded in many, many different places. Forgive me, I don't have a list of all the places for you to look up. You'll do your own searches and you'll find it. That, why say Metatron? Because instead of Matat, because it's only a Greek name. You're absolutely right. Metatron is not a Shem Kadosh. I don't care what anybody says. It's from the Greek root Metator. That's not the entity's name. Matter of fact, the entity is not a singular entity. It's a collective. Go into the Emek HaMelech and Shara Yitzirah. Big story. There's a race of beings, and they're all collectively called Metatron. But that's another story for another time. But thank you for that comment. Yes, for those people in the religious circles who traditionally say Matat instead of Metatron, I am not of that tradition, sorry. Getting back to business here. Lost my train of thought, but hopefully we'll find it again. Getting back to the issue of these entities, these malachim, these people who come down and take on human form. Like I said, it happened in the days of the flood, and we have many, many midrashim to talk about this. The story goes like this. All right. When a Kadosh Baruch Hu was creating man, he asked the Malachim, what do you think? What do you think, guys? We think we should create Bnei Adam? And there was a group of Malachim that says, Ribbono Shel Olam, forgive me the paraphrasing here. Why should you do that? And Hashem, you know, I don't like your attitude. Burns them all down. The other angel said, yeah, a great idea, Hashem, go create the man. Created Adam. But there was always a group of malachim who objected. They said, Ribbono Shel Olam, we exist in a realm outside of space and time. We know the past, present, and future of this act. We know that humanity is going to fall. We know that there's going to be great imbalance and harmony between the universes. Why don't you just choose us to do this? We've been your faithful, loyal servants since Day 5 of creation, day 2 of creation, which from God's eyes happened, of course, in 6 days of 24 hours. But from our point of view, relative space and time happened over a period of, I think, 14 to 16 billion years. That's how you have to understand creation. When you get guys like Professor Gershom Schroeder, who writes his book, Genesis and the Big Bang, he makes scientific sense out of this. But we have Rabbi Yitzhak de Menachel, who wrote things 800-900 years ago. Again, quoted in Rabbi Arya Kaplan's books, The Age of the Universe. This stuff is, for Judaism, old hat. So again, those people who want to say the universe is only 5,770 literal years old and God created everything in 24 hours, six days, 24 literal hours, they're contradicting and violating Torah Judaism, and they have to be looked at as outside the parameters, not being the ones who create those parameters. But that's halakha for you. That's clearly what our sages say. And you can't deny it. So, whatever. Getting back to business here. These entities, however old they were by our judgment of time, they said, Shalom, come on. What's going on? Why do you have to bring down an entity from outside of creation to accomplish a task? What task? Now I'm going to bring you into a big secret of the Mekubalim. Adam was not the first human being who walked the face of the earth. There were great civilizations before him. You can read the Tiferet Yisrael commentary by Rabbi Lipschitz. I think it's Hakdama the Parshat Sanhedrin. It speaks all about the pre-Adamics. In my writings, I list dozens and dozens of sources that speak about the Shemitot, the pre-Adamic civilizations. Again, clearly the works of Chazal. Anybody who contradicts the words of Chazal, again, outside of Torah Judaism, let them deal with our sages. Okay? But now, Adam's job is to be, if you will, like the first Mashiach. Even the Arizal writes about that, even though he doesn't discuss the Shemitot. But you have other people who, according to the Ari, discuss the Shemitot. The Sha'ar Ratzon on Tikkuni Zohar Lamed Vav. That's Tikkun 36. Anyway, so the watchers, the ones of the same Malachim. We'll get to the watchers. Relax. You're jumping ahead here. I got to speak to the guys who write me questions in the text. I try to look at them. Some people don't like me to say, oh, it's distracting. Oh, you know, don't worry about it. We're all one big family here. But anyway, getting back to business. Adam was a non-physical, non-flesh and blood entity, a collective race of beings who emanated from a dimensional outside of space and time as we understand it, with a specific purpose of being the conduit from the highest to the lowest. Being that he had contact to the highest source, he was able to descend to the lowest plane, and therefore being an anchor, a sulam aliyah, a ladder of connection between all the dimensional planes. That was the purpose of Adam. A funny thing happened on the way to rectification. We all know the story, Garden of Eden, Nachash, and everything else. Remember, the Nachash stood on 2 feet. He had arms, he had legs, and he spoke. He was, for all extents and purpose, a humanoid reptilian. Did you ever hear that one before? Talk about the watchers, eh? Moving right along. Adam gets stuck in the physical form of this Malchut of Asiyan, disconnected from the higher Asiatic and other dimensional planes. Our neshama is up there, but that little itsy-bitsy part of the neshama is in our physical brain, and that is, if you will, the feet of the neshama, the Malchut of the neshama, the nefesh of the neshama, and that's the part that makes up us here in this physical world. We get all bogged down. It's kind of like getting your toe stuck in a hole and you're trying to pull it out. That's our neshamot in this physical world and the whole purpose of rectification. Well, this is our job. Now, the malachim who interact with us watched all this. And for the record, a point that is also made, you find in the Emek HaMelech. You mentioned Metatron before, so I'll get into it right now. When Adam descended into this physical plane, not all Adamic souls accepted to descend. There was almost like a civil war in the Adamic race. And a large portion of them stayed above and did not descend and then get stuck here. These became the guardian souls, the guardian angels, the magidim of those who got stuck below. Collectively, they are called Metatron. Yes, I revealed you a big secret now. Of these entities above, of these higher entities, there were lower entities. I give you an example of a science fiction novel written by Arthur C. Clarke. He's the guy who wrote, 2001 Space Odyssey. One of his earlier books is called Childhood's End. It's a very profound story. I recommend everybody to read it. Not to get in the whole story, but really in brief, the aliens come and land. And they say, okay, our job here is to fix humanity, which ultimately they do. Long story short, these entities come in, and after, over periods of hundreds of years, they're watching for certain children to develop certain psychic spiritual powers, which ultimately, like overnight, hundreds of millions of children around the world do. These children are put in a special place where they evolve, and as they do, they literally evolve beyond space and time, and they are absorbed in what's called the Overmind, which of course is the novel's version of what we would call God. The planet Earth disappears, all the rest of mankind disappears, kind of like what it reminds me of in Isaiah, about there being a new creation, a new heavens and a new earth after the haru of the destruction of the old. But the interesting point about this novel is that these aliens are watching all of this happen. They can't make that ascent and transformation to join what the book calls the overmind. Their job is only to, you know, be the conduits for this process to occur. This is exactly what the Malachim are. Their job is to be conduits. Our job is the ascent. Of these entities whose job it was to watch over us, the Daniel 4 calls the Irin, or we know later as the Watchers. A number of them got together and said, you know, guys, we warned Hashem that this was going to happen. We told him that this whole mess up is going to be. To which Hashem said, if you guys went down and were subject to the forces and energies and powers of physical space and time, you would become more corrupted than the Adamic souls. Well, we, the angel said to themselves, we don't believe that. Come on, let's go down there and show Hashem wrong. That's exactly why the entities decided to descend. They did not intend to descend with the purpose of fighting heaven, but in essence, prove heaven wrong. They came down, they wanted to set things straight. But going down through the many ethers and levels and energies placed a great profound weight, and literally, being that they weren't connected to a higher source, scrambled their brains, if you will. Kind of like what we learn in the Kabbalah of the Arizal. We speak about the fall of the seven kings who reigned in the land of Edom prior to there being a king of Israel. The reason why the original vessels shattered, and that whole set of metaphors in the Torah of the Arizal I cover in my long series on Otzrot Chaim, available in Hebrew, translated into English, available on koshertorah.com for you, MP3, CD, and all the rest. You should learn this stuff. This is why I tell you it's there. Just like it happened there, it happened here. One is reflecting the other. One is the external and one is the internal reality of what happened here. And now we're in a position to pick up our story in the sixth chapter of Enoch. Let us read the words, hopefully, with the time that we have left. I'm going to try to get through chapter 9. It's not so important, all the little details of the story, which is written in many other places, but to understand what really happened. All right? We know that Hashem, because of what happened, sent the flood. And I got some interesting information here on the side, so I'm going to share with you if I remember half the time. But let's get into the text. Enoch, Chanoch Aleph, chapter 6. In those days when the children of men had multiplied, it happened that there were born unto them handsome and beautiful daughters. And the angels, the children of heaven, saw them and desired them. And they said to one another, come, let us choose wives for ourselves from amongst the daughters of men and beget children. Now, got to stop here for a quick second. If you're a higher spiritual entity, what are you looking at, a lower evolved primitive form of life? I'm a human being. We consider a lower evolved form of life to maybe be monkeys, chimps, orangutans, okay? I don't know about you. The only place I see chimps and orangutans and stuff like that is either on television or in the zoo. And you know something? You can take a female chimp and a female orangutan and put them in a mini skirt and a pair of high heels and ain't going to do it for me. Mm-mm. That just ain't my type, right? I am not in the hairy females who hang from trees. That's, you know, forgive me, I ain't Tarzan, all right? Doesn't work for me. Why did it work for a malach? What was going on here? You see, our story is an older version of the story that I shared with you earlier about the angels wanting to come down and rectify the Adamic thing. But somehow, Rabbi Soloveitchik's version of this makes more sense, that they were actual humanoids and they had attractions. Now this opens up a can of worms for us, because when you go into modern conspiracy theory of UFO cover-ups, they speak about entities being humanoid and having a very rich and hearty sexual appetite. When you go into the study of demonology, the likes of which you find in the writings of the Rishon Rabbi Menachem Tzifuni in his Tzifuni Tziuni, you speak about how the demonic entities cherish and crave physical sexual union with human beings to bond apparently the DNA of both because the offspring are clearly physical. About the Rabbi Natan, the 30th chapter there. Now, remember the famous story in the Gemara? How Asmodeus, the king of the demons, came and shapeshifted into the body of King Solomon so he could sleep with all his concubines? Non-physical entities don't do that. Physical entities do. Okay? So, it says here, the leader's name was Samyaz. Now, I would love to see the original Aramaic or Hebrew form of this. I have the Sefer Chitzonim in, by Kahana, in Hebrew. And even he is just translating from these later sources. So, the original names, as far as I'm concerned, are lost. I do find it interesting, however, that one of the most hilarious UFO scenes that claims comes out of Europe. I'm not going to mention the guy's name. I wrote about this in my UFO and Aliens in Light of Torah Mitzvah book, ebook available on Kosher Torah. And this guy claims that a flying saucer came down and that the people who came off of it were these 7 foot tall, hot looking, blonde haired, blue eyed men and women. And he actually has a photograph of this blonde alien supposedly from the Pleiades. And hubba hubba. All right? I don't know about putting the gorillas in the mini skirts, but this one, she's a hottie. Which makes, forgive me, it reminds me of an old science fiction story from the 1950s. I think it was called The Devil Women from Mars. The story is the flying saucer lands and this, you know, babe in this skin-tight leather suit comes out and she tries to kidnap human men. And they say, why do you want to do something so evil to us? And they said, because we had the great war of the sexes on Mars and we killed all their men. We need you men to repopulate our planet. You know, I could just see this being remade today and it would be probably an X-rated film with the minds of people today. But boy, oh boy! You think that all these aliens, like this guy, this crazy guy says that these hot-looking, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, you know, babes from outer space? Man, if the flying saucers ever landed, the guys would be waving at, take me to your leader, take me to your leader. Okay. This is, somebody says, the Nordic aliens. Yeah, that's what they call them. All right? You know something? I don't know what that guy was on, and I don't know, you know, who's kidding who. But boy, oh boy! I mean, I'm sorry. The reason why I'm telling you this story is because I find it actually very amusing. The reason why I'm telling you it is because the head of this alien group of blondes called himself Samyaz, which is the same name as this fallen angel. And I think he said, yeah, my father's name is Elohim, or my father's name is Yitkevavke, yeah. And you can tell by the nature of the story that it is either a concocted baloney or a clear and overt demonic deception. So, one or the other. So, Samyaz, their leader, said to them, I fear that perhaps you will not consent that this deed should be done, and I alone would become responsible for this great sin. But they all responded to him, let us swear an oath and bind every one amongst us by a curse not to abandon the suggestion, but to do the deed, to do the dirty. They all swore all together and bound one another by the curse, and they were all together 200. And they ascended into a place called Ardus. And some say here, in my text anyway, Ardus, I have no idea where that is or what it is. It very well could be inner earth. Remember, hollow earth and all the rest of that stuff? Yeah. Also, Zohar Mefureshet, words of our holy sages, not to be denied. People say, nonsense, silly, you know, you talk like that, you contradict the words of our sages, and you're a kaifa, you're an epicurus, when you want to contradict the words of our sages, and some of our sages say, so deal with it. I don't know where that is. It says here it's the summit at Hermon. Well, we know where Mount Hermon is, right? All Israelis go there to ski in the winter. Is there some kind of vortex? Is there some kind of landing pad there? I've heard really weird stuff in the conspiracy theory circles that speak about stuff being out there. Even, I'll mention his name, Barry Chamish, the guy who made famous the conspiracy theories about the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin. He has pretty much fallen from grace and has been pretty much marginalized, but his original material was about UFOs and alien encounters in the Holy Land, in Israel. And I think more than his Rabin material, that probably is what, shall we say, drew the attention of certain powers that be that wanted to make sure he was eight ball in the corner socket, if you know what I mean. But moving right along. So, they called the mountain Armon, and they swore and bound one another. And it gives the names here, Samjaz and Arkeb, and all these names of these angels, which some of which make sense, most of which don't. I'm skipping through them simply because they're irrelevant, really. He says, these are all the chiefs of tens and the others with them. Chapter 7. This is where things get really weird and interesting. So they took for themselves wives, and everyone respectively chose a woman for themselves, and they began to go into them. Here's where weirdness, you know, we should play the Twilight Zone music now in the background. This is weird. Listen. And they taught them magical medicine, incantations, the cutting of roots, and taught them about plants. Why? Who is sick? What got wrong with them? They were an indigenously natural, harmonistic society. Their guys were living to 1,000 years old. What's there to teach them? I think this is the camel before, what is it, what do they say, like it's the cart before the horse? Their injection of their alien DNA corrupted human DNA, causing there to be mutations which caused all kinds of perversions and things, and therefore they had to inject all types of, what can I say, healings. This is a big issue. Whenever you are messing around with DNA, you're messing around with the laws of Mother Nature, of the Shekhinah herself, and when this happens, things become tremendously corrupted. And the wives became pregnant and gave birth to great giants whose height was 300 cubits. That's pretty tall. All right? A cubit is about 2 feet. And about 300, that would be 600 men. That's bigger than Godzilla. But in light of what we've discovered in South America, you know, the drawings that were written over hundreds of yards, and you can only see them if you're up in the air, they see the symbol of what looked like carved thrones in the sides of mountains. The Midrashim speak that the original children of Adam were giants, literally hundreds of feet tall. There are claims that there were bones of such discovered, but modern society, of course, dismisses all of that as nonsense. So you know something? Unfortunately, there are four realms today that have been seriously compromised. The academic world, the scientific world, journalistic world, and the entertainment media. This has become the access of misinformation today. And like what we see with the lies and misinformation about global warming, right? Everybody wants to radically shove this down your throat. And then when truth comes out, then it ain't so true. Right? 15 years, there's been no evidence of it. Clear as sun, right on the front page of Fox News today. People don't want to hear it. They take a fundamentalist cry. You gotta wonder, why is there no true openness? Fundamentalism is a poison of the mind. True Torah requires openness. What was going on here? Were these entities actually that physically big or not? I don't know. Do they still exist? I don't know. But you will note that in the legends of all ancient peoples around the world, it was always stories of giants. And these giants weren't like primitive ancient dummies. They were advanced. When you hear stories about the old gods of the ancient world, whether it's of the Olympians in the Greek tradition or the Asgard in the Norse tradition, everyone wants to dismiss and say, oh, nonsense fairy tales. In light of these fallen entities, who very well might have been gigantic entities, who very well might have lived in inner Earth or in a parallel dimension, and clearly interacted with humanity, I'm not so quick to say that ancient mythologies might not have some type of historical basis somehow, somewhere lost in the pages of pre-Noachian history. So you never know. When we read about Og, Melech, and Bashan, right, the giants that were left in the days after the flood, don't be so quick to dismiss these things. But it states here that the giants turned against the people to eat them. Why? Not enough food. So they began to sin against birds and beasts and reptiles and fish, and their flesh was devoured by the one by the other, and they drank blood. The earth brought an accusation against the oppressors. The planet Earth is alive. It has a soul. It is conscious of itself and it's conscious of God. And where did I get this mystical pantheistic teaching? From the writings of the Hilchot Yesodei Torah of Rambam Maimonides, the rationalist. He says this very clearly. The earth is alive. Just like it's portrayed in a modern fantasiacal movie called Avatar, that the whole earth is connected and alive, that's true. It is. That's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created it. We don't have long tentacles that fall out of the back of our head that we can plug ourselves into the world. At least not physical ones, but we have spiritual ones. And that's why you learn. Malo kol ha'aretz kavodo. The world is full of God's glory. Everywhere and everything is the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And every true Chassid and Ben Torah knows that. But now here's where things get even more weird. Azazel is introduced here. Remember him? He's the guy who you got to bring out the goat on Yom Kippur, right? Bring out one goat to Hashem, one goat goes to Azazel. Why? Oh, long story, got to talk about that in the days when the time comes, close to Yom Kippur. He taught the people the art of making swords and knives and shields and breastplates. He taught them war. Why? Who is fighting? Who did he want to fight? Was he treating or creating human beings to fight one another? Or was he creating for them or himself an army? He taught them what we will definitely and definitively call ancient technologies. Ancient medicinal technologies, like it speaks about plants and cutting of roots and all about that. And ancient technologies of warfare for both killing and healing. Strange today, how we also have conspiracy theories of the aliens coming down to teach humanity technology. Heard about that, eh? Conspiracy theories, eh? I would encourage you all to go online and go buy yourself a little book. It was written by a colonel in the U.S. military by the name of Philip Corso. It's called The Day After Roswell. Colonel Corso worked in the Pentagon, as I just said. And he states that he was in charge of a lot of this secret security stuff. And he wanted to get it all off his chest before he died, so he wrote this book. And the amount of stuff that he reveals in this book and all of the details and facts that he brings down, pretty hard to bite your tongue and say there's nothing to it. Now, do governments keep secrets? You bet your bippy they do. They better. Pray God they do. That's the way governments survive. Black ops projects? Thank God they do. It's the way they survive. If modern day governments found, discovered, or came in contact with these entities who have, let's just say, have always been here, do you think they'd want to make that public? Can you imagine the announcement? Yes, we have connected with a group of entities that have been here on Earth for the longest time. Oh yeah, and the biblical tradition they're called the fallen angels and demons. But they're not so bad. Can you imagine the panic out of the world's great religions? I think if this were true, there would be great reason to keep such a thing silent and to keep your bigger mouth shut and to silence those who speak about it. But what do I know? Right? I can just quote to you what others say. Right? I've never been visited, to the best of my knowledge, by the men in black. Yeah, I've seen them on my DVD. Will Smith and all the rest. Very entertaining, right? I don't see these dubious forces. I've driven by Area 51, you know, the extraterrestrial highway. I think it's Route 341 through, you know, Nevada there. Very freaky, very weird, very remote, spooky. Didn't see any little green men and flying saucers coming by. That's just the reality of it. But yet our sages speak. These guys did come down. Ladies especially, pay attention to what other corruption the entities say. They also, Azazel, remember Azazel, bad guy? This is also what he taught. Shadowing. He taught the ones, he showed the chosen ones to make bracelets and decorations, shadowing of the eye with colors, ornamentations, the beautifications of the eyelid, and all kinds of precious stones, and all coloring, tinctures, and alchemy. Female makeup is clearly of demonic fallen angel origin. That's right, ladies. Every time you're putting on that eyeliner, every time you're putting on lipstick, just remember, it was Azazel who revealed that to ladies. I personally am so adamantly, absolutely dead set against feminine cosmetics that, I go off on you. All right, I'm very serious about that. I have never seen a woman who looks as good with makeup as she does without. A woman who is natural expresses the beauty of the Shekhinah. She doesn't need war paint to cover over her natural beauty. I consider it disgusting. Indeed, I once heard it said by a secular source that cosmetic companies manipulate through their advertisements and break down the self-esteem of women, steal it from them, and then sell it back to them for the price of their cosmetics. No greater truth, I think, could be said. I don't care what any women say. Cosmetics are meant to be seductive. They're meant to, in quotes, make you look good. Not just before the other woman who you want to impress, but look in the eyes of a guy. Look at the psychology behind cosmetics. Why the lips are certain colors and what they're supposed to signify in the minds of men. This is a mind control technique. Just like warfare is done with the sword, it is also done with sex. We know that from the famous story in Sefer Bamidbar, when the daughters of Moab came out to seduce the Bnei Yisrael. They did it in this exact same way that Azazel taught them. And true Batei Yisrael should run from this light as far as they can. I mean, the material here is clear. Later, rabbinic opinion, Al Pi Pshat, of course, gives credence to women because women weren't willing to give this up. In the days of the Second Temple, women were so influenced by the Greek or Roman culture, and it's followed through to this day. And it's a terrible avera. It really is. And the more natural woman, that to me radiates a true woman's beauty. And I only wish that I had the power to inspire women to truly embrace this and see this for themselves. But the words are right here in black on my feet to read for themselves. And it's associated with alchemy and all kinds of manipulations of nature, of psychology. And there were many wicked ones, and they committed adultery and erred, and all the conduct became corrupt. Who committed adultery? The angels did it. The women did. The women became corrupted, and know something as a fact. Just like we know from the Midrash Chazal, it is on the merit of the women that we were redeemed from Egypt, and so it is on the lack of merit of the women that we are in exile. When women become corrupt, the entire society collapses. It happened in ancient Rome. It happens here in the United States in Western society with all this, in quotes, women's liberation, where a woman no longer has to be a truly archetype and a matriarch, but she's a whore. You see it by the way the women dress. You see it by the way the women act, right? You see it by the problems people have in finding a shidduch today in the religious circles. They can date 100 people, none of them are good enough because of the poisoning in their minds. All right? This is the corruption. All right? A woman's body is sacred. It's not meant to be passed around from guy to guy just to please your sexual appetites. It's a terrible misapplication. Today, we no longer associate sex and love together. Men are known to be able to detach their heads from their hearts and to literally just jump from bed to bed because for a man, sex is like having a meal in a restaurant. One night you have Chinese, next night you have Italian, and it means nothing to them. Women were never like that. Women truly always understood the power of passion in the heart. That is being ripped out of women today by telling a woman, be like a man, work like a man, act like a man, think like a man, be like a man, and use a man's own manipulations against him. Be a whore, dress like a whore, act like a whore, and corrupt men and bring them down so you can rule. That was the way in the pre-Adamic civilizations, which were so corrupted that they had to be destroyed. When women today act like this, they are resurrecting this ancient way. And this is the cause of why apocalypse comes. And we must always understand this. So, please, pay heed. One angel taught incantation and the cutting of roots. The other angel called the resolving of incantations. The other taught astrology. The other the knowledge of the signs. The other one taught seeing of the stars and taught the course of the moon, as well as the deception of man. The people cried and their voice reached to heaven. What's wrong with learning astronomy? What's wrong with learning astrology? All of that's good stuff. But when you can use it to block out the higher forces by constructing the ritualization of the mechanical operations of the physical, disconnecting it from its parallel surrounding universe, which flows into it as a life force, then you're causing the great separation of powers of heaven and the earth. This is why the prophets always mocked the study of astrology. Because when a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants something, he can literally flip around all the orientations. When Hashem is about to send the flood, this ancient Midrashim state that all the great sages of the day knew. They said, in the language of our sages, we know the angels who are over the forces of nature, and therefore we can call upon them, and then we can nullify your decree. So what Hashem did, he says, he changed the names of the angels. In other words, he unleashed forces and power in nature, which they could not handle. Now, a very interesting book came out of Israel a long time ago. It's called Sod Hamabul. And according to this book, goes into great details and stuff. Pretty much, I'm going to show you a picture here for you in video. You're going to be the only ones to see that. You see some planets passing by the earth. And according to the book, it goes into great detail on how this happened. What Hashem did was he flung literal planets that came so close into the earth's gravitational field that it literally ripped the oceans up and out and smashed them down on the ground. According to our understanding, this is what led to the destruction of everything. Now, there are those who want to say that there's astronomical evidence that such planets are on their way back. I will let the conspiracy theorists and the astronomers with telescopes look out into the skies to see what they might find. But I do find it interesting that we have a historical precedence for this as it was in the old days. These people, these entities, corrupted humanity. They corrupted the DNA. Rabbi Avraham Asulain is Hesed L'Avraham. Writes that most of this originally happened on inner earth and also on outer earth. And that many of the species that existed then still exist today. Half-breeds between humans and animals. So you might have heard of stories of the Minotaur and the Centaur and things like that. According to Rabbi Avraham Asulain, as Hesed L'Avraham, he says these things are real. They exist in inner earth. We know from the Bible, Book of Job, there were phoenix birds. We know, of course, of a Godzilla-like entity called Leviathan. And another, maybe a King Kong type entity called the Behemoth. We don't know what they are. But we do know that on Earth these things exist. There were definitely dragons. There was definitely the Tahash, which many interpret to be the unicorn in our Earth. These things were secrets known in an ancient time, which were totally ripped out from us and lost. You must understand these things. Because if these entities are truly in touch again with us today, we're in big doo-doo. Because what happened then is going to happen again, and maybe this is going to be the precursor of Mashiach. In the time that we have left, I want to share with you a couple of things. I mentioned to you Colonel Corso's book about what he said. I have seen online, and if you do a little bit of homework, you'll be able to find, that in the Federal Emergency Management Administration, FEMA, they have a book, I think it's for firefighters. I think it's called Chapter 13. I remember seeing it at one time. Complete instructions of how to deal with a close encounter. And you should know that if you or I were actually flying saucer lands and little green men come off, did you know it's against the law for you to go up and greet them, shake their hands, and go, welcome to Earth, right? Take me to your leader. You get arrested for that. They'll put you away. It's a law in the books. FEMA actually has emergency management preparation for close encounter the third time. Go online, you'll find it there. I don't think it's a conspiracy theory. I think it's a real thing. from the research I did, it looked pretty real to me. They know something. We all know something. Of the people who know things, the very interesting book I read a while back, and I'm going to recommend it to you. I cannot verify the truth of anything written in this book, all right? But I think it's very interesting what the author writes. It's a book here called Exopolitics, and I'm holding it up to the screen for you guys to see. Political Implications of the Extraterrestrial Presence. It's written by a Dr. Michael E. Sala. And his ideas of, you know, all right, if the entities are here, where they come from, how they get here, and what do we got to learn from this? He also brings down some very shocking and significant information, which, again, I can't confirm or deny, but it's interesting and fits into maybe some words of Chazal about there being an ancient extraterrestrial presence in ancient Iraq. And he suggests that maybe the reasons why the United States invaded Iraq in the first place might have more to do with some type of an extraterrestrial exploration than else. For those of you who want more information, you can get Dr. Sala's book, Exopolitics. It's available on Amazon.com, as is Colonel Philip Corso's book, The Day After Roswell, as is my book, Walking in the Fire. My ebooks aren't up there. My ebooks you got to get by us. And I encourage you to try to put the pieces of this puzzle together so that you can hopefully draw some conclusions. Look out in the world today and recognize the veil of illusion and deception that surrounds us. Chapter 9, and obviously we'll pick up on that in Lesson 4 when we get to it. It begins and states that the angels Michael, Surafel, and Gabriel observed carefully from the sky, and they saw much blood being shed upon the earth and all the oppression being wrought upon the earth. From the sky? Why is Michael, and I don't know who Surafel is, and Gabriel, what are they doing in the sky? Were they flying an airplane? Flapping their wings? I never understood that. You know what I seem to be suggesting by saying that. There might be a very much more terrestrial form of entity than what we give credit for, and certainly not with the philosophical, the what we call the Bali Kabbalah unit. You know, they don't know. They read books, and they repeat pedantically what the books say, and they have no idea what they're talking about because they have no experience. These entities, they're real, and they're out there, and somehow they're connected. Daniel 4 speaks of the Watchers, that there's an entire race of entities who literally stand behind the scenes of everything. Famous Midrash says there's not even a blade of grass that grows that doesn't have an angel behind it, telling it, you know, grow, grow, grow. It's the spiritual energy, the consciousness, the mind behind it that goes into it. It's the connection of the parallel planes, of the universes. These entities who came down were fallen watchers. They were given the command and the control to watch over the earth. And a group of them rebelled. These watchers are also called in the Sefer Yetzirah the Tili, of whom it says that the Tili rule in the world like a king upon its throne. And the Tili, for those of you who know Hebrew, are also called the dragons. They are a race of holy, possibly reptilian entities? Seraphim? Yes, possibly. And maybe it was one of their rebellious numbers who came down and corrupted Adam as the Nahash in the Garden of Eden. Maybe. Wasn't there. Couldn't tell you. Can't say. But I suggest it's a possibility. From putting together the pieces of what Chazal have taught from many different sources, we do have to ask these questions. This is all stimulating and great stuff. I've written about it in my UFOs and Alien ebook. I've taught this in numerous other courses and lessons, of course, available on koshertorah.com. Talked about it in Torah parshas that relate to Bereshit and Noach and stuff like that. But we have to draw the conclusions. This is why I mentioned to you Dr. Sala's book here. All right? If something is really going on, I believe there is. I believe that it might be the underlying power of what we call the Armilus, or the Christians call him the Antichrist. And it might be an entire coordination of events to bring us to a specific scenario in history, which will bring us right back to the flood of Noah. And remember, the final judgment before Mashiach comes, what's called the Third War of Gog and Magog, the Gaon of Vilna brought down a very interesting tradition. And it says, during the Third War of Gog and Magog, it would last only 12 minutes. And during that time, a third of the world would be burned with fire, and a third would be devastated but not fully destroyed, and only a third would get out scot-free. Sounds like a nuclear war to me. And when you read the words of the prophet Joel, words that we recite in every Passover Seder, that there will be signs in the heavens. It said, blood, fire, pillars of smoke. The pillars of smoke in Hebrew, timrot, ashan. Ashan, of course, is the Hebrew word for smoke. Timrot comes from the word tamar, tamara, or a palm tree. Do you ever see the shape of a palm tree? Long and tall with a big plume at the top. Similar to the shape of what we would today call a mushroom. Does he say mushroom smoke or a mushroom cloud? Is that what Joel insinuates? I don't know. These are all hypotheses. These are all suggestions, all things to think about. We see the corruption of women in our society. It is such a shame that the daughters of Israel and the daughters of Noah are being so terribly corrupted, more so by sexual sin than anything else. We know this. We see the lies and deceptions that we have in our society. We see more and more we're being drawn away from the natural order into a unnatural way of life. This is also terrible. Exactly what happened. We hear all kinds of rumors validated by all kinds of strange sources. Colonel Corso, day after Roswell. But just like it was with these fallen angels giving secret unknown knowledge to people before, so we have it again. You have a connection with the Nazis. How the Thule Society in Germany, which is the secret occultic society, somehow made connection with some entities that gave the Nazis some unknown power. One thing is historically accurate. In 1919, Germany was a complete bankrupt nation. 20 years later, they were one step away from conquering the entire world. No nation in the civilization of humanity has ever had such a quick turnaround time like that. They had true power. Nazis and the occult, validated in numerous books, even on television shows. It is said that such powers never disappeared, but have stayed here with humanity, and have now corrupted at a much greater level. True? False? I don't know. I can't validate. I can't confirm. I look at this only as with the eyes of a rabbi, looking at the world today, seeing the corruption that there is, and reminiscing back to Enoch, and reminiscing back to the other words of our sages who taught, we've been here before. That frightens me. It should frighten you. Research these things. Contemplate these matters. Draw your own conclusions. I'm Rabbi Ariel Bar Tzedok of KosherTorah.com. Thank you for all listening to me tonight. God bless. Shalom.